You are listening to Capital Correspondent on The Voice of Russia. I'm Carmen Russell-Sluchansky. You can follow us on Facebook. Just find Capital Correspondent on Facebook. You can also find us on Twitter @CapCorrespondent. You can also send us an email during the show to onair@CapitalCorrespondent.com or post a Facebook message. We will get it or tweet at us, and we will take the question. I am currently in the studio with Pete Tucker. He's a local DC reporter for at thefightback.org, and I also have in the studio Kentry Kennard, senior journalism major at Howard University. Pete Tucker is going to be taking over for me next week as I leave the country. I'm going to be going on a vacation. That's the bad news. The good news is Pete is a veteran journalist here in DC and covers lots of local politics and activist movements and lots of great stuff. Pete, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And Kentry, not to forget you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Pete, so you know you're going to be covering the show. You're going to be guest hosting for me. I do appreciate that.
Appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, my
big
pleasure.
Big shoes to fill.
I don't know about that. We'll see. Maybe I won't have a job when I come
you
back.
You will have
they'll,
a job.
They'll hopefully they don't give it to you. No, I've heard your stuff at thefightback.org. I think it's great stuff. I really appreciate the work that you do, which is of course the reason I'm inviting you. For people who are going to go to the site now? What are they going to find? What's the big story that they're going to see there on the site?
Well, there's a lot of local D.C. issues, education and taxi cab issues. They'll find a lot of that on the site at thefightback.org. The D.C. is trying to – we don't like to write our own policies so much in D.C. as just copy what's going on in New York. And D.C. and New York are very different cities, so that has varying degrees of success or lack thereof. And one of the issues that we'll have an opportunity to talk about in your absence, Carmen, is the D.C. attempted to push through a medallion bill, which ultimately failed thanks to drivers organizing against it. In New York, a medallion, and that's kind of a metal fixture which is on the hood of each car, goes for about $1 million. You can't drive a cab.
$1 million.
$1 million. You can't drive a cab without one. So what ends up happening is that you have a few big companies that move in and buy up all the medallions, and drivers move from what they are in D.C., which is independent owner operators, to more like almost a sharecropper model where they work for these big companies, and the money ends up, you know, a few big companies end up benefiting much more so than in D.C. So this is among the issues that we'll have a chance to look into next week.
So let's look at that. So part of what you're saying is that Washington has a cookie cutter approach, if you will. You know, let's basically borrow laws from particularly New York. And why is that? I mean, why do they look to New York? I mean, it's the biggest city. I mean, does anyone really think that these things apply? I mean, it's a different environment. It's a different size city. I mean, there's everything different about D.C., I would think.
There's everything different about D.C. I mean, when it comes to taxi cab issues, you know, New York's the 24/7, 365-day city. D.C. depends on Congress being in session, and when the schools are out of session, the college and universities, it's a very different city, and there isn't the business to be able to sustain a taxi cab driver the way there is in New York. But what ends up happening, I don't know why, but people just get kind of churned through, and each person comes along and knows everything about the taxi cab industry, even if they've only spent a few days studying it. And so you have to, and, you know, almost by there's no other option really than to just look what other cities have done. And there's no bigger city than New York in the U.S., so we just look that way. For example, in New York, you have an age limit of 5 years on taxi cabs. That is, you can drive a taxi cab 5 years, and then my understanding is it has to be taken off the road. Well, when you have medallions and you have these cars are then put on the road 2-3 shifts at a time, that may or may not make sense for New York City, but it certainly does not make sense for D.C., where cabs are on just one shift per one driver, and yet they're trying to push through making drivers here buy cars every 5 years, which would put most drivers out of business. And this is the type of thing that is happening in D.C. And as you pointed out, D.C. is a very different city than New York.
You know, my first gut reaction is that, the taxi fares will increase, but that's actually regulated, so they can't. So like you said, I mean, a lot of people would just be, you know, a lot of drivers would be put out of business. So I guess that means fewer taxis, right? I
mean, that's
I walk
right
out the street and I can't get a taxi.
That's
so
cool.
There's a consumer issue here.
That's right. Not that the consumers really thought about all that much at the level of the D.C. Council. Certainly they weren't regarding the medallion bill that was attempted to be pushed through, where it would have, by definition, the bill would have eliminated half the taken half the cabs off the street.
Wow.
And that makes the medallions more valuable. The fewer cabs you have on the street, the more the medallions are worth, the more you know, you can have a few companies buy in, buy these medallions and keep the calves on the street constantly because the demand is greater than the supply.
So it's almost like stock market. I mean, like, you know, yeah. they're actually profiting off the value of the medallions rather than the business, the services that they're providing.
And in D.C., that was beat back thanks to driver-owned companies came together and were able to beat that back. And so D.C. remains unique in that it's driver-owned, it's independent owner-operators who are making up the overwhelming majority or the majority of drivers. And that's something they have to fight for every day.
And another thing you're going to be looking at, I think, on the May 1st edition of Capital Correspondent is Walmart and the moving into Washington, moving into New York. And there's been some different reactions from both cities and people in both cities and the governments in both cities, the city governments in regards to that. Can you talk a little bit about what we're going to hear?
Yeah, well, Carmen, there's been very different reactions from how New York has dealt with Walmart's attempt to come in and how D.C. has dealt with Walmart's attempt to come in. New York has a public advocate. It'd be interesting. It'd be good to have D.C. have that same position. And the public advocate produced a report that in no uncertain terms laid out that Walmart would have a devastating impact, at least a very negative impact on Walmart coming in. And you had the Manhattan Borough president, I think it was, who more recently released a report showing that Walmart was not, in fact, the answer to food deserts, you know, areas where you have lack of access to fresh fruits and vegetables. So you have serious reports being done by elected officials really examining Walmart's impact and coming to the conclusion that this would be a bad thing for local businesses. It would, in fact, not help jobs, but for every two jobs created, three would be destroyed. That from the public advocates report. And in D.C., there's been a very different approach. Walmart the Walton Foundation, which gets its funding through the members of the Walton family, which have received their money. They're the heirs to the Walmart fortune. They've thrown around an awful lot of money in D.C., some $25 million for a controversial teacher's contract, which came through a couple of years under Chancellor Michelle Rhee, which severely undermined tenure and other teacher protections. That was funded with $64.5 million in private money, $25 million of that coming from the Walton Foundation. They've funded jobs programs. They've just had a tremendous footprint regarding throwing money around. And instead of having oversight hearings and reports written by elected officials here in D.C., they rolled out the red carpet. And Walmart is attempting to push in six stores in D.C. And D.C. is not a big city. Six Walmarts in D.C. would be a game changer. And there's been really no serious opposition from elected officials.
I'm even trying to think, is there a Walmart here now? I can't think of where there's a Walmart.
No. No, there's not a single Walmart. They've broken ground and one, maybe in two stores, but they're moving forward on six stores. They actually been held up. It was interesting to read in the Washington Business Journal that they put it very bluntly. They've been delayed, I think it was 13 months, because of activism. So people are concerned and there's opposition. And because of that, they are delaying the building of these Walmarts, and they're not Walmart's also looking at these new model where they go like much smaller stores. These are not those. These are significant sized Walmarts attempting to bring six to DC.
You know, it kind of gets us onto the topic I think you're going to be exploring later in the week, which is of course gentrification. Because, you know, one of the things this makes me think of is the Target store that's up in Columbia Heights. You know, it wasn't that long ago that let's just say that the, you know, Columbia Heights has changed significantly over just the last few years. It seems like, and this is you know, this is a real issue: the gentrification of Washington, the prices of real estate, you know, just rentals in the Northwest, and now even, you know, the Southwest, the South. I mean, everywhere is just kind of like skyrocketing. What's you know, what are you going to be talking about there in terms of the gentrification? There's a couple projects you're looking at, I believe.
That's right. And let me say, I'll talk about one of them, and I'll kick it to Kentry Kennard, who's with the Urban Revival. And they look at this issue very closely as well. We're going to look at gentrification not only in D.C., but in the D.C. area. And one project in particular in Alexandria, the west end of Alexandria, Virginia, just a little bit outside of D.C., where there is several thousand units that all of a sudden the land under them became much more valuable because of the BRAC process, the base realignment and closure. act where the Pentagon is closing some bases and then expanding other bases. And so a base in Alexandria at Mark Center got a huge building built and got so a lot of jobs, 6,400 defense worker jobs were all of a sudden shifted to this area. And so the land next to it became immensely much more valuable. And you have a largely Latino, African-American, other immigrants who are living in housing right there. And so that housing is largely being demolished. And so maybe 10,000 people will be displaced in one single development. It'll take 20, 30 years to finally build out. But this is, you know, it's happening block by block. It's happening all over the city. But the level of this many people being displaced all at once and the lack of press coverage of this is why I think it warrants some further attention and something that we will get a chance to look at next week. But I know that this is an issue that affects all the cities, certainly around Howard University, and certainly it's an issue that Kentry knows well, being a native Washingtonian.
And as a native Washingtonian, I couldn't be more disheartened. Some of the things that bother me is the blatant disrespect. You can find a billboard on Florida Avenue that says, you won't even recognize the place, promise. So it's like basically telling all of the residents of Washington, D.C. that, you know, pack your bags because change is coming. And it goes back to the Walmart issue where I don't know how you can fit six Walmarts in an 11-mile radius without giving up the whole city aside from maybe Capitol Hill. And it's just a continuation of the gentrification that's really was amplified and highlighted by starting with the administration of Mayor Anthony Williams that's just continued. And it's also a D.C. statehood issue that I think needs to, you know, be mentioned here because, you know, we don't have votes. We don't get to vote in Congress and we don't have representatives. And that does play a big role in it.
Kentry, you know, on that point, I wonder. It strikes me that, there's a lot of people, and I'm sure yourself, would like this. There's some improvements you would like to see in D.C., in neighborhoods and you know, one of the gray areas, one of the difficult lines to walk, I think, is a little bit this kind of, you know, balancing gentrification versus, well, development, improvement. I mean, things are not necessarily synonymous, right?
Well, absolutely. And when you're talking about gentrification, you cannot have a one-sided view of it. You have to also understand that while the cost of living has gone up in Washington, D.C., a lot of people have left the city of Washington, D.C. in search of better schools for their kids and in search of a more suburban lifestyle. So that's to be taken into account, as well as the fact that, yes, you do want development in your city. But when that development comes at the expense of people who the native indigenous people of the land who actually want to be here, you know, who no longer can afford to be here, then I think you're starting to have a problem. And that's one of the things that we really like to focus in on the urban revival, because we feel as though if this development that's going on in Washington, D.C. just displaces people of color and the indigenous people here. Well, and I don't mean indigenous in the sense of, you know, historically over time, but the people who've been here over generations, then what you have is gentrification.
All right. I appreciate that, Kentry. That's Kentry Kinnardi. He's a senior journalism major at Howard University and also with Urban Revival.
www.theurbanrevival.com.
Excellent. We just have about 30 seconds left, Pete, so I just want to say thanks for filling in next week.
Privilege and honor. So happy to do it.
And for being here today. So definitely check into Capital Correspondent next week. We'll be taking a slight detour, but getting to some very important issues, some local issues affecting both D.C. and New York. It's not all that. What is it? Tip O'Neill once said, all politics is local.
All politics is local.
But what happens outside the back door of the White House and Congress is just as important as anything that happens inside those doors. So check out Pete Tucker at thefightback.org and also on Capital Correspondent next week. Again, you're listening to Capital Correspondent. I'm Carmen Russell Sluchansky on the Voice of Russia.